1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, welcome in, everybody. Happy Wednesday to you. Brought to you by Metro Rooter. Jaguars Today live from Everbank Field. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony. Ryan O'Halloran of Florida Times Union in off the practice field. And he's here ready to talk a little Jaguar football with you. What's going on?
Not much. We got five. I think we're halfway through the OTAs.
Five OTAs in the books.
Yeah, so that's good.
Just waiting for them to get done?
Pretty much. You know, our Chris Clemens watch continues. We have a tote board in the media room. It's now an MIA list. But, you know, same thing we talked about last week. Guys aren't practicing. It's, you know, missing a lot of receivers. So it's tough to get a gauge of who's running at which what spot on the depth chart.
We will talk today. We'll hear today from Greg Olson. Tony and I had him on right after he got hired here in Jacksonville, but hadn't had a chance at that point, Tony, to work with any of the raw material that he's got to work with, and really hadn't met any of the guys, to be quite honest. Wasn't allowed to talk shop. You know, I don't know if that stuff goes on or not. I assume it does in some circles, you know, in terms of discussing the new offense.
But I'm sure it does.
By NFL rules, none of that stuff happens prior to the allowable window. But Greg Olson spoke extensively after practice yesterday. We'll get to his comments coming up. Gus Bradley's as well. Today on the program. But Ryan, last couple days of OTAs, we haven't talked to you this week. What has stood out to you within the parameters of what you're allowed to talk about?
Well, it's, you know, I guess if we're grasping at straws here, you know, when you have a new offense, you expect some hiccups like guys line up wrong spot, play blown dead. Hey, you go here. You're not supposed to be there. It seems like the operation is running smoothly. And what's interesting, and we're not talking at a school here because everybody, you know, they mention it, is how they do a separate situation each day. Yesterday was 2-minute no huddle. Tomorrow is going to be short yardage. The third down was last week. So, you know, that's, they put everything, they put the whole offense in front of the players in the building. Now it's about working on sections of it between now and the end of the off season. So when the training camp starts, it's not totally foreign to them, and you're not adding layers as you go. So that's the one, the other thing. And then Bob Babich talked on Monday, and he said that, you know, there's a noticeable increase of team speed. And I said, was that because you have better players or guys who just are more comfortable with what they're doing? He said it's a combination of both. And that's one thing that these guys were banking on, is the guys who've been here in year three are complemented by the new guys who are better than the previous guys, and you mesh those together. You hope, and hopefully for the Jaguars' sake, you get a better defense.
I think Gus Bradley and Bob Babich both have referred to having a team that plays fast more so than just the speed on the field. We love guys like Telvin Smith who can run, but I think Bob Babich, particularly this week, made note of the fact that it seems like guys are thinking less, right? Just going out there and understanding what they're supposed to do, recognizing and reacting, which is what you want on defense.
Yeah, and this is a perfect time to do it because you're not worried about having to, you know, get your shoulders square, make a hit. You can fly around a little bit. And that's, you know, what stood out is, you know, on Monday I tried to, like, keep myself busy by scratching out, like, an unofficial depth chart. And the people who – the first team offensive line looks how you would think it looks right now with no Wisniewski available. But you look at the backup linebackers, I mean, they're running 6, 7, 8 guys at a time, and, you know, with different units. So that's going to be interesting during camp. The back end of the defensive line rotation is going to be interesting. You know, and also, okay, tight ends, receivers at the back end.
The back end of the defensive line rotation in terms of which guys are going to – tough cuts, right?
I mean,
compared to, like, linebacker, you're more concerned with who's going to fill those spots. I think on the defensive line is still – even with Fowler going down, you're thinking, do we have too many bodies for – that many spots,
I mean,
which is a good problem.
Yeah, I mean, do they feel they have 10 able bodies for 8 available spots?
Right.
You know, or 11 and 9 and so forth. And what's going to be interesting when we get down to that 53 and we're looking at what they do is, do they keep an extra defensive lineman to compensate for maybe Marks and Miller not being 100% ready to go in terms of playing their regular duty? Or, you know, do they keep extra linebackers because they want to focus on, you know, improving the special teams and taking the next step there? And so it's going to be a lot tougher for us to guess than the previous 2 years.
You meant Jamar, you said short yardage?
That's what they indicated, yeah.
How do you practice short yardage in a non-contact practice?
Well, then Gus also said that's like a walkthrough.
Okay. Just kind of like make sure everybody's in the right spot.
But, yeah, and to give you like an indication, and I asked this yesterday, is one thing that Greg Olsen is known for from his running backs who have said this is if you can't pass protect, you're not going to play. So I said, okay, how do you work on that now? You know, because in the last 2 years when the pads are on, they didn't do blitz pickup drills, which is telling. So – And he goes, well, you can, he gave some, you know, roundabout answer. Well, you can put him in the right spot, send different guys. So I think they're doing things against air.
Are they showing that they can recognize who their assignment is, whether or not they actually physically pick them up, right?
Get in front of the right guy.
Now, when you say that's telling, are you saying that's telling that Jed Fish didn't have them doing that?
I thought it was because I'd seen it, the other coaches I've covered. It just wasn't prioritized. That was my feeling.
Jed Fish, two-year guy here, obviously, Greg Olsen coming in. What's your impression of Olsen? We can't know what he's going to do with this offense yet, but just what's your impression of the overall hire and the philosophy that you've heard him espouse up to this point?
Well, when he was hired, let's face it, it was underwhelming. I'm sure, you know, they tried to hit a couple home runs and then they circled back. That's why the search took so long. As far as his reputation, you had Derek Carr saying, oh, he's great. You know, Sean Payton saying he's great. Well, yeah, I think he's bounced around because he hasn't been in the best situations. So it's sort of working against him. But there's a reason why he gets all these coordinator jobs. One thing the players said, and I'll preface this saying, it's June 3rd. Everything's great. Everybody's going to win. Everybody's going to score touchdowns.
16-0, baby. No limits.
Thank you. So everybody's like, the offense, oh, it's great offense. A couple guys have brought this up without me asking about it is they're getting more into the why they're doing this. They're not just being given a play, do it. They're given a play, say, hey, this is what we're trying to accomplish here on this play, the matchup we're trying to get. Obviously, you want to get a first down and touchdown, but in terms of where they're moving guys around. You know, this is why they're putting two and three tight ends on the field on this play, that kind of thing. So I think the players, young and old, sort of appreciate that because it's just human nature. You want to know the why.
Sure. Ryan O'Halloran here with us to explain the why today. And as I said, we'll hear from Greg Olsen extensively coming up throughout the show today, which prompts our Tom Bush Family of Dealerships fan feedback question of the day. Makes you go a little bit deeper. You can't just pull this one off the top of your head necessarily, or maybe you can, depending on how well-versed you are on Jaguar team history. But throughout your tenure as a Jaguar fan, in your opinion, who has been the best coordinator the Jags have ever had? That can be offense, defense, or special teams, whichever way you want to go on that. And you can tweet us your responses to that at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran. Of course, you can post on the Jaguars Today Facebook page as well. And you can also call the program at 641-1010, which doubles as the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line as well. 641-1010 if you'd like to get on. We'll hear from Gus Bradley coming up. We'll hear from Greg Olsen today. Take a look at Pete Prisco with CBS Sports. Did his ranking of the top 100 players in the league. We'll break it down into blocks of 10 and tell you which guy in each block we felt was overranked and underranked as we go through that a little bit later on in the program as well. If you'd like to get in, you know the way to do it. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran of the Florida Times Union, Fat Tony here with you. It's a Metro Rooter Wednesday just kicking off. Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. How to say this, Tony? As we embark on Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday, we're all football all the time here. Can the freaking NBA Finals start already? Seriously. I cannot watch this college softball garbage. I'm not going to watch match play college golf, for goodness sakes.
Major League Baseball going on, brother.
I don't have the package, so I'm limited to whatever game they throw on. You know, like,
right, and you don't even have like MLB Network.
No,
right? Like you keep singing this jingle from this commercial.
Yeah, 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 Bosses Rose, Bosses
Rose.
Like,
I may have seen that commercial, I may not have.
I'm telling you, it's on every channel,
but
that I watch at least nonstop.
But I'm watching, you know, I've been on SEC Network and MLB Network I've been on MLB Network since the season got started.
Right, I don't have time for that. I mean, I'm not saying your life is so unimportant that you do, but I guess I am.
You're implying it, at least.
I'm implying it heavily here. I'm not going to watch. I don't need to watch anymore. I'll probably see the Yankees play 30 to 40 times between
right.
ESPN and when they play the Rays and all that. And that's plenty for me. I don't
sure.
need that. You know, if they happen to make the postseason, I'll see that too. But
how about the first place Twins, by the way? How about that?
Twinkies. You want to talk Twinkie baseball?
Sure. My rub is that they're not on MLB Network enough for a first place team, but they're only going to show the big market teams.
As they should.
Stunned.
Aren't they on?
Stunning.
I think they're on today or tomorrow. They're carrying
tomorrow.
The Twins game, yeah.
They have a day-nighter, so they're on like the 1 o'clock game. But stunning that they're in first place.
I think the Yankees have six guys hitting below 200. Are you kidding me? And they're in first place.
Yeah. That's a division's terrible.
The AL Central is a pretty good division. I think who knows if they'll keep up. But I watched the Nationals. And I had the Nationals and Blue Jays on last night on MLB.
Yeah, I wouldn't go there. With the Nationals. If you do, that's fine.
I watch the Nationals whenever they're on.
I have enjoyed the NBA playoffs, so I've watched a ton of NBA playoff basketball.
Hockey starts tonight again.
I don't care, but I try, even with the Game 7s, we talked about this on Monday, Game 7, scoreless, late second period, I turn it on Friday night, I'm like, eh. 30 seconds is what I gave it. And I'm like, eh, this is, what?
I made my NBA Finals pick last night based on which city, Oakland or Cleveland's a bigger loser. And I determined that Cleveland, based on their history, is a bigger loser, and they find bigger ways to lose. And I said, Golden State in 7, and it's going to be painful. For whoever loses this thing, it's going to be
so it'll be like 3-1 Cleveland, you're saying, basically.
Yeah.
Something
yeah.
like that. And then they'll blow
They'll find a way to blow it.
I don't know. You know the commercial I'm talking about? Does everybody has to know what this
Somebody out there
is.
Knows the commercial you're talking
it's
about.
It's probably Mercedes. I said Mercedes. Probably Mercedes Lewis. It's probably Mercedes because it's something. It's something German engineered, I'm thinking. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Was ist los? It's everywhere. I'm walking around the house singing that. I don't know what it's for. Anyway. Moving right along, or are we? Do we have Gus sound in, Tony? What are we looking at right
not
now
yet.
With Gus Bradley? All right, we're going to bring you some Gus Bradley and some Greg Olson coming up here in a couple of minutes. Also get into Pete Prisco's top 100 list that he revealed yesterday on CBS Sports. Cam Newton got his new deal done, over $60 million in the first 3 years, which will help set the benchmark in that regard, at least. For Russell Wilson, Andrew Luck. I heard the guys talking about this morning saying, you know, if I'm Russell Wilson, I wouldn't play it. I'm not a, you know, they're saying they're not big holdout guys. But I don't have that big of an issue with holdouts because holdouts, while they're outs, they're, you can look at it as not living up to your contract, but there's conditions written in and a structure written in that if you hold out, here's what the penalty is.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like a breach of contract. It's a breach to a degree, but it's not like it breaks the contract. It's not like it absolves the team from having to pay you when you do show up. You know, I don't think there's, you know, there's risk of anybody getting hurt. If I'm Russell Wilson, I'm playing football, and I'm trying to go out there and go to the playoffs for the fourth consecutive year and maybe get to the Super Bowl for the third straight year, and then I'm thinking $25 million a year.
Man. Well, I just want to say that, well, I think that's the floor for Luck.
Oh yeah, Luck will get the biggest deal.
So and really, I think for both these guys is I do think it's going to be a little bit, let's say 6%. About okay, do we take a little less to keep some teams together? Because I mean, those two guys seem like they want to follow the Brady model, who has taken less for a long time.
But with the salary cap going up so much,
well, you have to project. I mean,
right. Do you need, how much less do you need to take? I mean, if you take, so let's say you take $25 million this year. I'm just throwing makeup figures around, right? And like compared to say, I don't know, 5 years ago, $20 million, that $25 million probably leaves you with more to spend in today's salary cap than that $20 million would have 5 years ago, right? Because the overall cap is that much higher right now.
Well, the cap this year is $143 million. I mean, is it good? If in 3 years it's going to be $175-$180, well then you're going into a different.
Wouldn't you go into it thinking that that's kind of the way it's headed in the NFL?
Well,
until proven otherwise,
I wouldn't. If I had to go, if I had to project, when's the next TV deal? I don't know, because but each year now it's only gone up like 2 or 3 million. It's not like an, it's not going to be like an NBA thing where it's going to just go.
It's going to plateau because they're getting the brand new TV.
Yeah,
money
and
coming
it's going to be the minimum salary is going to be $10 million or whatever. It's going to be crazy money. So, you know, so those are. I mean, you look at Cam's stats, 30 and 31 as a starter. I mean, I think is a lot of money. Carolina got themselves in this mess a couple years ago, previous GM with cap mismanagement. Be interesting to see how they make this work.
I think you got
to
pay him, though, don't you? I mean, he's a young guy.
I thought it was. I mean, you had to re-sign him because the same reason we talked about with Tannehill.
Right. If he leaves,
then what?
Then what? Yeah. Right. Who would you rather have, Tannehill or Cam Newton?
I would say Tannehill.
As of right now, I would say Cam.
Yeah. I would look more in, okay, who's going to be standing up in the next decade?
Because of his style of play?
Yes.
Okay. That's fair to say.
I think Cam will have more success because of the division he's playing in.
There's part of that, but I don't know if that's really the case. I mean, how much longer is Tom Brady going to be in New England? You know?
Forever.
He's not going to be there forever.
American hero.
He had that article that came out last year. I can't remember if it was during the playoffs or right before the regular season ended, but it was talking about his new regiment that he goes through, like the new workout stuff that he's doing. He has like every meal planned for the next 12 years of his life.
Avocado ice cream.
Yeah, Tom Brady does. And he feels like that's the reason that he had the resurgence that he had last year, and I'm going to play another 5 or 6 years at this kind of level.
Well, he's always talking about playing until he's 40.
Right, and look, we'll see how long Tom Brady's going to play. I think with a guy like Cam Newton, you got to pay him. Right, I mean, you got to pay him something because you don't want to have to go back into the, hey, let's try to find a quarterback pool in the National Football League when you have a guy that you feel like can win divisions for you, and you know he can. He's done it a couple of times already in his career with Cam Newton. You look at the other, I took a look at the other quarterbacks last night under the age of 30 in the league, and honestly, the list, there's a big list of them because about half the teams in the league right now have starting quarterbacks that are under the age of 30. But there's not a bunch of them that you feel good about. I mean, it's basically Andrew Luck, Russell Wilson,
Flacco. Cam Newton. Flacco 30?
He's 30. Cam Newton and
but 30 is what?
Stafford's like, 27.
30 is the new 25.
He's like the new 26, right? Something like
but
that.
But Stafford's 27, and then it's like Kaepernick and Dalton and this list of
I feel better about
Flacco
than
all
almost
these
all those guys.
Me too. And look, Roethlisberger's 33 or something like that. I'm not saying those guys are
That's
done.
My guy.
Right.
Bortles under 30?
Yeah, he's 23.
Excellent. Yeah, lots of years of prosperity coming our way. But the big thing with Cam, his record in December and January, including playoffs, is ridiculous. Something like 14-4 or 14-5 his last 18 or 19 games. Pretty spectacular. That's probably the entirety of his career, actually. I heard Mark Dominic quote that stat. I think it was him, whether they're discussing this on NFL Insiders or one of those myriad ESPN programs the other day.
And he finally won the playoff game last year, but that was Arizona had nothing. I mean, they were a shell of themselves.
You know what, Cam? If I'm Cam Newton, I'm like, what do we have exactly here, right? We've had the same retread running backs for a while now. Jonathan Stewart stayed healthier than he had in a long time, but D'Angelo Williams was on his kind of getting towards his last legs a little bit. They had Kelvin Benjamin, a rookie wide receiver, and nothing else of note. Jericho Cotchery, not a whole lot going on. They had Greg Olsen, nice player, but you know they lost Greg Hardy, who was clearly their best player and certainly their best defensive player from the year before, and maybe Keekly, you could argue those two were about on par.
They only have 4 more wins than Jags.
Right, but they won the division.
But I mean, what I'm saying is they were a great team.
They're not a great team.
But, you know.
They're not, but for Cam Newton, I mean, look, he's topped his division. He's put up big numbers at times, both passing and obviously running the football. And I think it comes down to what you said, Ryan, initially. What are you going to do if you don't pay him, right? Who are you going to get then? And you're going to go the Jimmy Clausen route, something like that? Not going to work. You got to pay the guy that you're there with. I don't think most of these deals, how many teams do we even see anymore as free agency hits that are in any kind of cap trouble? Not that many, right? I mean, I just think it's not going to be that big of an issue. I think teams are getting more savvy on how to manage these big cap numbers, which is a reason that the Jags, you know, extended the employment of John Idzik here in Jacksonville and kind of made him the assistant to Dave Caldwell. Didn't kind of. They did. All right, let's get to some Gus Bradley thoughts here before we've got Greg Olson coming up, Jaguars offensive coordinator as well. Gus asked yesterday, this is in reference to Bill O'Brien saying that none of his rookies are in good shape, right,
in Houston.
Right? So O'Halloran asked him, courtesy of Jaguars.com, the sound here, if the rookies here are in shape.
I think they're getting in shape, you know.
There's some truth to that.
Well, I think the frustration probably, I don't want to speak for everybody, is that, you know, how do these guys come in? You know, I think it's sometimes as a coach, you don't want to give in to the standard. Hey, they come in from, they're traveling, they're going to all these places, they go through the draft. Now they come into rookie minicamp. Well, we're not going to lower our standard. They got to come in ready to go. And then maybe you see some injuries and, you know, then you look back and you say, well, they are traveling a lot, and there's a battle. Do you give in a little bit and maybe go 75%, not do rookie mini camp, give in to the fact that they could be traveling and not quite in shape, or do you maintain the standard? I think that's the battle everybody's going through, I'm guessing.
Yeah, it's interesting in just how much football we're asking these guys to play year-round in a sport that I'm not sure it's supposed to be played as much as we're asking guys to play this game right now.
Yeah, I just threw that out there because, you know, things were grounding to a halt. I always want to keep the train moving. But I always find O'Brien interesting what he's saying. But, you know, but I think Gus's point is, okay, they like practicing at a certain tempo. Are these younger guys, do they slow down to help these younger guys, or they keep their tempo and say, hey, you better catch up?
Right.
You say, you better catch up.
No, that's the way it should be, yeah. Right?
You now would they're think. Professionals.
Right. You don't want to slow everybody else down to bring everybody else down to their level.
Gus Bradley yesterday also asked how many quarterbacks they plan on carrying on the 53-man roster.
Well, we haven't talked much about that. It could be, you know, we've had two and one in the practice squad, so we'll see how that turns out. I think that would be more the possibility, two and one on the practice squad.
Seems like
that's what it's been the whole 2 years.
Right. Seems like the easy guess. Apparently, you didn't ask that question. But did you ask him how Stephen Morris looks yesterday?
Hell no. I wrote about that 3 weeks ago.
Somebody asked him, and then we'll talk about his response. Here it was.
I think with Stephen, the decision making and things like that, I think he needs to, you know, that's the challenge that he's gotten placed in front of him. So I think he's doing solid. I mean, and you know, for me, if I say solid, that's not, you know, great. But I think, you know, we just want to challenge him.
Did Gus peel back the curtain a little bit right there? Did he just find himself just talking and say, wait a minute, did I just admit that when I say somebody's solid, they're really not that good?
I don't think. I mean, it's not looking good for Stephen Morris.
I mean, you can hear it in his tone of voice, right? Play that cut again, would you, Tyler,
I like
please?
The tone of his voice was, why am I being asked this?
Well, maybe, but go ahead, Tyler, play that cut.
I think with Stephen, the decision-making and things like that, I think he needs to, you know, that's the challenge that he's gotten placed in front of him. So I think he's doing solid.
All right, yeah, the decision-making, yeah, that's the challenge. So apparently not good decision-making from Stephen Morris out there, so there you have it.
There's a lot more better stuff than that.
It's coming, okay?
Is the next one better stuff than that? I know this one asked by your boy Hayes Carline, as I was watching
question.
The press conference, talked about the offensive tackle depth and how Gus Bradley feels about it behind Parnell and Jokel right now.
It's good. I like Wells. I think Wells is coming along. Also, the guy that's been doing pretty well at guard, the change he's made, is Austin Pastore. I think he's done a really nice job. He's caught our attention. Here he played right tackle. Now he's moving in at guard, and he's doing some good things. You know, it could be down the line where he could maybe be a swing guy, you know, play guard and tackle, you know. Until we get the pads on, we'll see. But that could be a possibility. So I think that adds even more depth for us at tackle.
It's going to be an interesting competition in camp because you can't keep everybody. And if you play two positions, that helps your case. You know, you're going to keep Bowenko and Wisniewski. So whoever doesn't win the starting job is your interior guy.
Same thing with Cannon. Beatles. I would think they're keeping Beatles regardless.
Yes. So that's seven.
Right, yeah. There's seven guys.
So you keep... you have to keep somebody who can play tackle.
Right.
So is that, you know, is that a Wells, a Pastor, a, you know, a Brandon Williams? Probably not him. But so there's a lot of it's going to be interesting to see when they put the pads on.
This is a really good question somebody asked yesterday, asking Gus about Greg Olsen's offense and how important it is to pass protect as a running back.
That was me.
Fist pumps in the room right now. Yeah, I knew it was you, pal. You know, how difficult it is to assess that without getting those contacts.
Oh, we talked about that already.
We did, but here's what Gus had to say.
Well, no, you can, because some of the pressures, I think we're learning as a team how to run pressures in OTAs and give guys a look for the pressure, but also not be out of control. And almost looks better than sometimes our four-man rush. You know, the guys understand it. So they're doing a good job. In 2 minutes, there was a couple situations we brought it. Saw Toby Gerhart come all the way across the formation, you know, block. So I think they're understanding it, but more is asked of them.
And that was kind of a backup to a question that was asked earlier, talking about rookie minicamp. Gus Bradley gave his thoughts on teams that have moved those rookie minicamps to 2 weeks after the draft instead of the week after.
I think we have an audio issue with this clip. We'll pass
it
on
sounded
that.
Like
that's
it.
What it sounded like.
Hey, Ty, why don't you tell us what you think Gus would say to that question?
Oh, I have the could. Answer.
This guy.
Oh,
this
I'm
guy.
Looking at. I'm looking at the.
Do you want a gold star?
This kid who keeps raising his hand in class.
You want a smiley
well, transcript.
Face?
Cause it.
Do tell.
Basically, I think Martin asked it is some teams.
Was it a good
back.
Question?
Brent always asks good questions.
Yeah, very nice.
I mean, basically, I think teams move it a week just to let these guys breathe for a little bit.
Right.
And, you know, and you get them in the building. You're not rushing to get on the field. And I don't think it's a health thing. It's, you know, can you prevent injuries by
waiting
a week?
Is it just kind of catch your breath kind of thing?
Yeah.
And it was he talked about it too. The reason they have it the week after the draft here in Jacksonville is the idea that they can get in the guys try that they want to try out that they want, right? Yeah. So, and they signed a couple of those guys, and I know for fans out there that are saying, really, you're going to work that hard to mine, you know, potentially spots 86 through 90 on your roster? Yeah. That's what these guys do. This is a business, and if they feel like it gives them an advantage to do it that week early as opposed to waiting that week and letting someone else see that guy on the field first with their team and have the chance to sign him, then they're probably going to keep it where it is.
All right, so Metro Rooter Wednesday, we got to step aside here quickly. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony, you're welcome to jump on board at 641-1010. You can also tweet the show at MD_1010XL. At Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL Fat Tony. Text the show on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line at 641-1010. Question of the day today asks you, in your opinion as a Jaguar fan, who's been the best coordinator in Jaguars team history? Offense, defense, or special teams, whatever you want to weigh in on that one as we anticipate hearing from Greg Olsen coming up here shortly, Jaguars' new offensive coordinator. It's Jaguars Today live from Everbank on a Metro Rooter Wednesday on 1010XL 92.5 FM. I don't know how we got on this. I guess I kind of do, but I brought up to O'Halloran because I thought Tony would be too young to remember this. Turns out Ryan was either too young or just didn't know, didn't care. That Kareem and Dr. J played one-on-one, and I believe it was like a pay-per-view, like in the early days of pay-per-view.
So closed circuit?
I don't know how it worked. I just remember hearing about this. Like, you could pay to watch this if you had a cable box back in the day. And it was called Clash of the Legends. It's on YouTube. And I don't want to spoil anybody's good 10 minutes of entertainment this afternoon. Spoilers in 3, 2, 1. When you're 7-2,
you win.
You're going to back the 6-7 guy down to the basket every time and lay it in. That's what you're going to do. So there you have it. Shocking upset. Kareem over Dr. J. Clash of the Legends. Looking at the text line, a lot of votes coming in on the question today via the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. A lot of hands down, no question, it's this guy. And there are a lot of different guys.
That means it's a good question.
It is, right? I mean, and that's fine. And a lot of people are voting for similar guys on each side of the football. But that's fine with me as well. By the way, the song's Da 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 by Trio, and apparently it's a Volkswagen commercial. That got me on the YouTube rabbit hole here a minute ago. Somebody sent me the link to that one. Did they text that one in, Tony? I believe they did.
Yes, they did.
On the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. I believe that is the commercial. Thank you, unnamed, at a 904 phone number. I'm not going to give out your entire phone number on the air, but I have that power. Don't you forget it. All right, Greg Olsen. Will he turn out to be one day considered the greatest coordinator in Jacksonville Jaguar team history? Certainly possible. Let's start with some of the questions that went on with Greg yesterday. And Blake Bortles said he has been excited for the opportunity to work with Blake.
I'm excited, really. I've been excited about it since the day I got here. He's a real hard worker, self-starter, or self-motivated player, and he's got good talent. You know, so I'm working with a guy that's a young player that wants to get better, and he's been in early every day, and he stays late. He's one of the first guys here in the morning, one of the last guys to leave, so excited.
He's excited.
He is excited. And I do find it interesting how perception changes so quickly in life, but in sports, certainly. Blake Bortles, to my memory, even though it was a surprise to people as the third overall pick, I think a lot of people consider him the better prospect than Derek Carr coming out of college, right? And then Derek Carr has more success, I think it's fair to say, as a starting quarterback in his first year, statistically at least. Mm-hmm. And they both won about the same amount of games. And now the feeling is, well, wow, Carr, Bridgewater, Carr, those rookie quarterbacks showed us something. We haven't seen anything from Blake, and it's kind of like he's been pushed down below. Greg Olson, I don't know if you could get the lie detector answer from him, you know, and he hasn't worked with Blake yet, but who do you think he would vote for in terms of which guy would he have more success trying to mold into a future Pro Bowl talent in the NFL?
Well, he'll probably say Bortles.
Well, he would now, right? But I mean, were you saying he would say that because he's got the job, or if he was on the lie detector?
Well, yeah. Last time I talked, before he got hired here, last time I saw Greg was at Bortles Pro Day. And so him and Dennis Allen were both there, so they made the trip. And from what I'm told is they really liked him, but they felt they were going to go another direction because they, you know, and they stuck with Carr in the second round, who they had at the Senior Bowl.
They took your guy, Khalil Mack.
My guy.
Your guy.
Busto-rama.
Yes. Prisco's guy. Wait till you see where Prisco's got him ranked. I know you've seen it, but Prisco a fan of Khalil Mack.
But, I mean, in terms of Olsen and Bortles is – you know, and what he also said later on is that Blake has embraced it. And that's the key thing. You got to have a want to. And
right.
We know he has that.
We certainly do. Greg Olson continuing to talk about Blake Bortles, talked about the difference watching Bortles on tape in his rookie season and now having the opportunity to see and work with him every day.
I think so. I think he's done a great job of cleaning up his mechanics, number one. And, you know, in technical terms, you know, his takeaway, he was dropping the ball down very low, and he's cleaned that part of it up. So now he's working on another aspect of his throwing motion. So I'm excited to see that. Again, very hard on himself. He's also critical of himself, but he recognizes what needs to be fixed, and he's able to do that. A lot of guys aren't able to do that.
Where he's holding the ball, that was surprising that he said that, because I didn't view that as a problem last year. He had 7 fumbles, but he only lost 1 fumble. So it wasn't his problem with turnovers was the interceptions. So, you know,
seven seems like a pretty high amount.
Yeah, I mean, was it 1 every other game?
Basically, right. Started 13. You know,
he didn't fumble at all when he was running. But to me, this is what I liked. Is I like when they say you get technical. That's what we want to hear.
Right.
You know, all you guys talk about is he's working on his fundamentals. Well, you know, we got some concrete stuff yesterday.
Have you noticed anything different about Blake?
No.
To your eyes? And is that just because the changes you think are subtle or, you know?
That's what I think. I mean, what you do see Bortles is during the practice, he is, like, doing a lot of
pantomiming.
Yes.
Emotion.
Practicing, you know, he's like going over things. So he's really schooling himself, but
it's like a golfer. Just
I mean,
practicing his swing.
Yeah. I don't think he's not ever going to throw a beautiful ball. I mean, it's not going to be these tight spirals 100% of the time, but he maybe is doing that a little bit. And that's what also Greg talked about is the follow through.
Olson also yesterday asked whether or not he asked Blake, what Blake liked in the offense from last year, and if they will try to incorporate some specific things that Blake felt he was good at into this year's offense.
Yeah, we do a lot of that in terms of the concepts that he was comfortable with. There are a lot of similar concepts from offense to offense, and so and we looked at it as a coaching staff as well, and wanted to find out what this group did well in both the run game and the pass game, because we have so many returning starters offensively. So that was part of our initial evaluation when we first got here as a coaching staff. So we've tried to incorporate some of the things that they did well.
Well, then I followed up by saying, so they did things well.
What did they do well?
Right. And he goes, oh, there were some good things, yeah, so we'll expand upon those.
Well, relatively to some of the other things, maybe, we saw it there. By the way, all cuts courtesy of our friends at Jaguars.com.
Greg Olson, the new offensive coordinator for the Jacksonville Jaguars, also asked yesterday about the two tight ends that he has here with Julius Thomas coming in and them holding on to Mercedes Lewis and how he feels about that combo.
I think it's going to be it's good, obviously, good for us. Good matchup issue for us, and they're both, you know, obviously Julius is more of the route runner type guy, and Mercedes is a guy that is a good route runner, but also is an extremely good run blocker, so I think they'll complement each other very well.
I had to make the move in a few leagues this week, Tony. We play in dynasty leagues that are very deep. Basically, if a guy's got a pulse, he's on a roster in our leagues, right, that we play in. Mercedes finally hit the street for me in a couple of leagues this week, making room for the incoming rookies, who I'm sure I will be cutting several of before the season's over anyway. But Mercedes, not that he had any fantasy value to begin with, but if he was on life support, they have pulled the plug as far as that goes at this point in time. And we will see. We're going to see, you know, I think a lot of the two tight ends, Ryan, and even some, as you alluded to earlier in the show, some three tight end formations out there. We know they want to run the football, and I think that's an indication of it.
Yeah, and you know what I'm viewing some of this stuff at is I'm always thinking about passing game. So is, you know, how you implement Clay Harbor, who was having a good year until he was banished to the bench for whatever reason. And so you have three tight ends like that. If you need a second guy as a lead blocker, is that one of them in the backfield since you don't have a fullback? So it's another thing. Another thing that's going to be interesting to see is,
you could certainly see Clay Harbor playing that role. I mean, I think he's got that kind of body type that he can do that.
The knock on him was his blocking last year. But it's another thing that whenever a new coordinator comes, it's in the preseason. How much is he going to show? And what he does show, how will he align guys? That's the big thing.
All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. We'll get more from Greg Olson coming up throughout the course of the show today. Jaguars Today continues on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. Also coming up, the state in football history and the Honda Drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you. We're live at Everbank Field as we are every day on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this date in football history brought to you this week by First Coast Roofing. I'll give you a quick update right now. Kareem all over Dr. J in the Clash of the Legends, 17-3 mid-second quarter, Tony. I think I'm going to live
four
tweet
quarters?
This. They played four quarters of that. Now, I don't know how long the quarters lasted, but they're in the mid-second quarter of this right now. They were exhausted 5 minutes into this.
Well, I looked
enterprise.
It up. They were 41 and 44 years old.
Oh, there you go. Well, I mean, it was clearly the career highlight for these guys. Kareem grabs the board on his own miss, goes back up strong, gets fouled by Dr. J, goes to the line, try to pad that lead. We'll get back to you later. Clash of the Legends. Happy birthday today. Sam Mills. Sam Mills' nickname. Who's got it? Sam Mills, linebacker.
Little man.
Close. Not really close. But
I don't know.
He was 5'9". Field Mouse. I remember them calling him Mouse. I don't remember Field Mouse. But Sam Mills. How about this? Sam Mills, born in 1959, 56 years old today, came out of college, and his high school coach had to talk Sam Ratigliano into giving him a workout with the Cleveland Browns. Didn't stick with the Browns. They liked the way he played, felt he was too small. Then he went to try out for the Toronto Argonauts. Didn't make the Canadian Football League. So he's doing some regular job, and the USFL opens up. And he says, well, let me go try out for the Philadelphia Stars. Well, he becomes a three-time All-USFL selection. They only played three seasons. Mm-hmm. Two-time USFL champion, a member of the USFL all-time team. Then moved to the NFL with the Panthers and the Saints, where his numbers retired with both teams. Five-time Pro Bowler, four-time All-Pro in the National Football League, and a member of the College Football Hall of Fame, inducted in 2009. Also born on this date in 1977. Oz Hakeem, at least partially responsible for R.J. Sauer coming here, right? Wasn't it?
Yeah.
Somewhat Coughlin's infatuation with the greatest show on turf, having Bruce Holt and Oz Hakeem as that third piece to go with Thunder and Lightning, looking for R.J. Sauer to step in and fill that role. But those are your birthdays for today. Not much else happening on this date in football history, although it is brought to you by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing. That is this date in football history.
Now, the Honda Drive around the NFL, brought to you by your Jacksonville area Honda dealers.
It's also my dad's birthday, so
happy birthday, Mr. Smith.
Mr. Smith. The NFL has announced its jersey sales for the month of May. The top 10 are as follows: Marcus Mariota, Jameis Winston, Tom Brady. Thanks to that free Brady movement, I got a feeling. Russell Wilson, Odell Beckham Jr., Rob Gronkowski, Colin Kaepernick, Dez Bryant, Aaron Rodgers, Peyton Manning, your top 10 in jersey sales in the NFL last month.
Did you see, by the way, Jameis was number one, right? Did you see where Lewis Murphy, former Gator, now current Buccaneer receiver, said that he sees a lot of Tim Tebow and Jameis Winston? Is that the only comparison where both sides are going, no, no, don't say that?
I think Tebow was 15th on the list in jersey sales.
Jersey sales still going strong.
Yeah, and then it's ironic that it was 15. Ray McDonald's former fiance says in court records that he repeatedly attacked her over the course of several months. According to the restraining order that the San Jose Mercury News obtained, she complains that he once choked her and kneed her in the stomach while she was pregnant. Roger Goodell, as expected, is not going to recuse himself from the appeal hearing for Tom Brady, and even less of a surprise, he has determined that he can oversee the appeal in part because he doesn't consider himself a necessary or central witness for the appeal. So I wouldn't expect him to be taking the
stand. I'd like to appeal that ruling on whether or not you're a necessary and central witness.
And a quick little nugget, the NFL has apparently chosen Yahoo to be the streaming service for the Bills-Jags game in London. That doesn't affect fans in Jacksonville, obviously, but all those other fans across the country that want to watch the game, it's going to be on Yahoo.
What does that mean? It's just going to be on Yahoo.com? You have to have some Yahoo, like, app?
I'd be interested to see if there's a catch.
Well, yeah. They do the they
it's
have
supposed to be free though, right?
Yeah, yes. They have Yahoo Screen.
Well, they make you sign in though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yahoo has like a TV service that they do now. Like they have TV shows on Yahoo.com that only they're doing. So it may have something to do with that, but Yahoo has been giving the streaming of the game between Buffalo and
Portally
Jacksonville
for $10 million.
Mm. Did you see what Prince Shembo's agent or attorney, I don't know if it's the agent or attorney, that said, because the girlfriend's not buying that the dog bit Shembo, right? The little Yorkie who he murdered the dog. She said that he said to her when she dropped the dog off to be watched by Shembo, a decision she will rue till the end of her days, quote, he said, "You're spending too much time with the dog, and I feel second to the dog." And then she went on to say, if he did bite him, why didn't he tell me when he confessed? Why didn't he say, "Dior"? Of course, the dog's name was Dior. "Dior bit me, and I reflexed by kicking him, and I'm sorry." Shembo's lawyer responded to that. At which point, he should have responded with a closed mouth, because this is what he responded with. He was not jealous of any dog. What caused the dog's injuries was that the dog bit him. I don't know. I thought the foot flying into him probably caused the dog's injuries. But what precipitated the foot may have been the dog biting him. Probably not. Dior, the Yorkie. Rest in peace, Dior. It's been good knowing you. There you have it. All right. What? Yes. Joe just gave Dior the sign of the cross over there. It was nice of him. Joe's a good Catholic boy. All right. Let's move back to Greg Olson. His thoughts coming out of practice yesterday on the rest of this offense. And we'll start with the wide receiver position now. A couple of guys he hasn't seen, really. I guess a little individual work this week for Allen Robinson, right, Ryan?
Yes.
But Marquise Lee and Allen Robinson, what does Olson think about these two guys who he hopes to have healthy sooner rather than later?
You know, it's good. Those guys, Robinson's been back doing some things, so we're excited about that. And he's really showed up the last 2 days, so that's, you know, my first chance to look at him live. Certainly had to evaluate him coming out of college and like the player at that time. And so he did some really nice things yesterday in his first practice back. And Marquise was doing well in the phase two before he got injured. But I liked what I saw out of Marquise as well.
Before he got injured, the key part.
Gurley.
Stay on the field.
Gurley and Gordon, the running backs taken in the first round of this year's NFL draft.
Well, that's a good question.
Would the Jags have moved back into that first round to try to go get one of those guys? They apparently decided that T.J. Yeldon, available to him at the top of the second round, was the next best available option as a three-down running back. Greg Olson talked about what separated Yeldon from the pack in the draft.
He's a great, you know, you'll hear Kelly Skipper talk about, he was a playmaker, and he played big in big games. He played in a big program. Obviously, the game wasn't too big for him at Alabama, and he's a very knowledgeable, intelligent player at the running back position. And Alabama runs really a pro-style offense. You're able to see him do things protection-wise, route running-wise, and blocking, really, and did a lot of things well that would translate well to this level of football.
T.J. Yeldon's going to get a heck of a workload this year. I know Dave Caldwell said they'd like to get him 16 carries a game, which would work out to 256. I could definitely see it going north of that, if he stays healthy, obviously, this year. Thoughts on what you've seen from T.J. Yeldon?
No thoughts on what I've seen, but reading, as I wrote today, you know, and I followed up with Greg, you know, can he be a three-down guy right away? He says, I wouldn't put it past him, but that's a lot to ask of a young guy. I think that's what they're going to do early on is you're our starter, but also we have guys here who can play third down. And to me, that would be Toby Gerhardt's role. You know, but if Yeldon gets on a roll within a game, then he's going to get a shot because his pass protection is something he did at Bama. So, that's why you have other guys on the roster.
All right. This offense, and how it is different when you've got the two different quarterbacks you've worked with. Greg Olson asked about his offense and working with Blake versus working with Derek Carr last year.
There's going to be some changes, and not just based upon Blake versus a Derek Carr or a Jeff Garcia or a Mark Bulger. I've had a number of different style of quarterbacks, but I think we'll try to play to Blake's what he does best and really what we think we can do best in terms of what we're doing with our offensive line. And so I think you'd always go in trying to build your offense around the skill set of your quarterback, and we'll start there first, but we've also got to be aware of what the rest of the guys around him can do.
Greg Olson also talking about singling out one player on that offensive line, said he's impressed with the third-round pick thus far in the rookie A.J. Cam.
Great. Great. He's an intelligent player. Again, they did a great job with him at South Carolina, I think, and he's got the right mindset for what we're looking for in a football player. So, we did an excellent job in evaluating the player. But those guys have kind of taken him under their wing, but he's jumped in. There wasn't a lot of prodding they had to do with him. He's come in and been a pro from day one.
Ryan, if they had their druthers, is this just straight competition, or would they rather one guy or the other win this competition?
I think they'd rather have to say, we can't go wrong with either guy.
Right. Good situation to be in when you've got two guys performing well.
And I think week one it's going to be Beatles.
I would suspect.
Yeah. And, as the season goes along, if I'm Zane, I'm the week one starter, it's my job to lose.
All right. A couple last thoughts from Greg Olson here, courtesy of Jaguars.com. Olson says that Bortles has been working right now on his release.
Without getting too technical, just after the release of the ball and the way it comes off his hand, so it's a consistent spin coming off of his hand, so something that he's working at.
Yeah, well, I mentioned that earlier, and if you can't get too technical, we certainly are not going to be able to get too technical. He probably can. He's probably saying, let's avoid getting too technical on this kind of thing and not getting hung up on it. But
probably, yeah.
I always think these mechanical things, you could maybe I'm sure you could tighten it up. I mean, Tom Brady doesn't work with Tom House for no reason. There have got to be things that helps you with. But when it starts happening, man, I think these guys revert to the way they played football for most of their lives.
Probably, but even if it's just something that mentally makes you feel better about what you're doing, I think that can have an effect on how a guy plays. Even if it's only in their own head that they're getting better doing something. Greg Olson finally talked about Denard Robinson. That was a big story last year with Denard. He had the hand that basically didn't work the year before. Couldn't hold on to the ball. Couldn't catch the ball. He's bulking up a little bit more this offseason. Greg Olson was asked about that.
He's gained weight from I had a chance to coach him at the Senior Bowl, and he's gained weight since then and strength, and he looks more like a natural running back. So been real encouraged with his progress and how he's competing out here as well.
Denard Robinson, early down backup to T.J. Yeldon.
I think so.
Right, when T.J. needs a series off, it's probably Denard coming in on first and second down. You see it?
Yeah, and so you have those. If you have Yeldon, Gerhardt, Denard set, then do you, Storm Johnson, Corey Grant? Corey Grant.
Fighting it out, right. Out.
Corey Grant, I would give the probably give the edge to right now because he can do things on punt coverage.
What about Pierce?
He's a wild card for me because I'm not, do you keep the younger guy over him?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and also, do you keep five tight ends or four tight ends and five tailbacks, five tight ends, four tailbacks? If there's just nine spots for those two spots or those two positions.
All right, coming up next, we'll take a look. Pete Prisco's got his top 100 rankings out. We'll rip through each group of 10 players, give you a thought on who we think may be over or under ranked as far as that goes. And due to time constraints, we move ahead in our coverage of the Clash of the Legends. Abdul-Jabbar with a three-pointer at the buzzer as he easily handles Dr. J. Post-game interview conducted by whom, Tony?
Jim Gray.
Nailed it. Jim Gray.
I was right.
The post-game interview is conducted by Jim Gray wearing a tuxedo, nonetheless. So there you go. The highlight, I'm sure.
I was going to say Magic Johnson.
Magic actually did make a cameo during one of the sucking wind timeouts to come out and shoot a three-pointer from the corner, much like the rest of the shots on that night. It was a brick. So there you have it. Go YouTube your Clash of the Legends, Jabbar. V. Irving from back in, I guess, sometime in the 80s, that was. All right, coming up next, take a look at Pete Prisco, CBS Sports top 100 players in the NFL list. Your thoughts welcome as well. Twitter, Facebook, and, of course, 641-1010 for both the call-in line and the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, and Fat Tony here with you on a Metro Rooter Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM. You okay with this music?
I like Coldplay.
Okay. Good for you to know that it's Coldplay. I got no idea. Life just passes me by. Music just washes over me. I got no idea. Da, da, da. Bosses Bills. From the 80s, Tony, which is older than the Kareem versus Dr. J pay-per-view.
Apparently, yeah.
1992, the big year. Pete Prisco's got his annual ranking of the top 100 players in the National Football League. I don't think we need to count down... For suspense purposes, I think the top 10's actually very solid here. Let's rip off the names in blocks of 10. You guys give me each a guy if you think is rated a little too high, a little too low in any given block of 10 players. The top 10, 1 through 10. J.J. Watt at the top, Houston Texan defensive end. Aaron Rodgers, number 2. Tom Brady, number 3. And Ndamukong Suh, number 4. Gronkowski, number 5, Andrew Luck is 6. Richard Sherman and Darrell Revis back-to-back at 7 and 8, so you don't have to argue too much about which one's better, although you put Sherman ahead and you're saying he's better. Von Miller at number 9 and Justin Houston at number 10, monster season with 22 sacks last year. Any sore thumbs stick out to you?
Is this a ranking going into 2015?
It's kind of a ranking. It's kind of a ranking of where they are. He said the best player in 2014 wasn't close. It was Houston Texan defensive end / tackle J.J. Watt. That's why he has the number one spot. I take it as a little bit of both, right? Like, how they played last year, but it's certainly not all on how they played last year because you'll see that a little bit later on. There's a guy who didn't play at all last year who's ranked in the top 100. So it's kind of a combination of how they played plus, I guess, where you think they're going. Anything stand out to you?
I don't have any real rubs on the...
You can nitpick Luck if you want to.
I think you could nitpick Gronkowski, too. I don't think there's a lot of debate that he's the best tight end in the National Football League, but is the best tight end in the National Football League the fifth best player in
the
NFL?
He's a difference maker.
No, he is.
He's a definite difference maker, and I think it's easier when you're doing these rankings. I did it once for Pro Football Talk a couple of years ago when they started doing their own top 50, and they basically maybe even did a top 100, and what they did was they got a guy in every NFL market to rank their top 50 players. And the first thing I did was rank the top 5 to 10 players at every position, right? And when there's a guy that stands out so much to you at that one position, I think it's easy to give him that extra little bump.
Sure.
So, and then interesting now, you got Antonio Cromartie talking about Richard Sherman. Well, he doesn't cover the best guy. He doesn't follow him around the field. That's what all the other best guys do. Back in January, Antonio Cromartie was asked who's the best cornerback in football. He said Richard Sherman. So
maybe he like tried to get Richard Sherman to sign something for him and he didn't.
Or maybe he's just back in the same locker room with Darrell Revis and he's going that route. All right, so no real arguments with the top 10, right?
Yeah, my first nitpick comes at 11.
11. Okay, let's get to 11 through 20 in this order. Dez Bryant, wide receiver, Dallas Cowboys. Peyton Manning. Odell Beckham Jr. already checking in at number 13. Luke Kuechly at 14. Roethlisberger at 15. I think, you know, Roethlisberger sometimes gets underrated a little bit. And he had a fantastic year last year. Marshall Yanda, who we talked about a couple weeks ago, Tony. Pro Football Focus had him ranked as a top 10 player overall for the season last year and how he graded out. Eric Weddle of the Chargers. That's getting nasty out there in San Diego. He's not showing up. He's saying, well, the team is trying to hold against him the fact that he never misses a snap. Like, you're getting worn down. You play too many snaps. You're 30 years old. He's like, hey, aren't you supposed to want to play? He's played 98% of their snaps, I think, over the course of his last contract.
Yeah, and they're not going to renegotiate a contract this year with Eric Weddle, so he's not re-signing with San Diego this year. And his agent's comments were basically, yeah, we'll see where we go next year. It was basically, we're not going to be in San
Diego.
We're
out of here.
We're done
right
with these guys.
Julio Jones at 18, Earl Thomas at 19, Antonio Brown at number 20. Your nitpick with Dez Bryant is what?
He should be higher.
Higher.
I think he's a dominant player. You know, 16 touchdowns, as Pete points out.
No doubt.
And, you know, Pete uses the perfect word here, passion. I love watching him play. He plays hard. So if you're going to sneak a receiver up a notch or two, I would have put Dez in the top 10.
I thought it would be Antonio Brown. I think that with what he's done the last 2 years, he deserves to be in that same conversation with the best wide receivers in the league.
And he is. I mean, he's in the top 20. But I think production-wise, you're right, Tony. I think he has been, over a two-year period, he's been the best guy in the National Football League. But my guess is Pete's argument would be, well, you know, give Dez Bryant the same opportunities in that offense, he'll do even more because he's got physical capabilities that Antonio Brown doesn't possess with the size, strength. But I'm with you.
He's got more size and strength. He doesn't have more quicks and speed.
I would
than
agree.
A guy like Antonio Brown.
Absolutely not. You know, and it depends on what you want. You know,
got a quick speed guy at number 13 on the list that's done it for 1 year.
Which is Odell Beckham Jr. And you know, you can look at him and you're trying to say, who do you think is the best guy? And you can say it's not Odell Beckham Jr.'s fault that he only has played 12 games so far in the National Football League.
No, I get that.
Look what he did in those 12 games. All right, let's move on from that to 21 through 30. He's got Gerald McCoy at 21. He's got Chris Harris at 22, which makes me think Pete relies on analytics a good bit because Chris Harris is a good ball player. I don't know if he's one of the first guys that jumps off the page to you, but the analytics folks love him. Again, Pro Football Focus ranked him, I want to say, as maybe a top six-ish?
He was five or six.
Five or six, right?
Pure numbers.
Just
five
based
or six.
On how he graded out last season, I think they said he had 15 positive grades, or maybe even 16 in 16 games. He's got Le'Veon Bell at 23, Demaryius Thomas at 24.
Bell's the first running back? Yes.
I believe so. Okay. Yeah, and I think that's reasonable based on the way he played last year. He's got Marshawn Lynch at 25, Robert Quinn at 26, Devin McCourty at 27, the would-be Jaguar, Jason Peters, the Philly offensive tackle, at 28, Jordy Nelson at 29, Michael Bennett at 30. He thinks he should be paid like that as well. I don't know, Bennett at 30. I don't know, man. Is Bennett a game wrecker? I know he's a versatile guy. He's a good player.
Well, that's my thing. Is like on Robert Quinn, 10.5 sacks is fine. I don't remember him making a, you know.
No, but if you go back the year before, he was like a 20 sack guy.
You know, it just, I mean, is how much of a part of it is help your team win?
You can make that argument with J.J. Watt, though, right?
Yeah. Well, you can make it. I chose not to make it. And spinning it forward is you can tell he's Pete's projector. Or else he probably, I think you can say Murray's in for a. Not a down year, but he probably comes back to the pack, which is why he has a younger guy in Bell higher.
I think Demaryius Thomas, to me, if you put a lot of guys in the role of the lead guy, you have to have the capability to do it, but I think they'd match his numbers if they're catching the ball for Peyton Manning, the way the offense has been run the last couple of years. Good player, maybe a little bit high for my taste. I don't think he's any better than A.J. Green, for instance. You know?
I probably think he's a little bit better than A.J. Green.
Do you?
I do. I think that Demaryius Thomas's ability to take that short pass, which we've seen several times over the last couple of years, and turn it into 60, 70, 80 yards. He has game-breaking speed for a guy at his size. I think this is about right for that guy.
All right, let's get through 31 through 40. Jamie Collins, linebacker from New England. I bring this guy up. We brought him up a few weeks ago. Hacker pointed out, hey, he goes, I don't think the first-round pick that New England's losing is worth all that much because look at these couple of years they didn't have a first-round pick. Well, one of those years they traded that first-round pick for four picks. One of those, just one of those four, was Jamie Collins.
You got to do that in the Hacker impersonation real quick.
Dirt. By the way, did you get the invite? The wrestling guy didn't get the invite to the wedding, right?
I don't even barely know the guy.
But you're wrestling buddy. So half the people at 1010 don't know him, and they got invited to the wedding, right, Tony?
Evidently.
The more you know him, the worse chance you had to get an invite to the wedding, I think. Jamie Collins at 31, Joe Thomas at 32, Muhammad Wilkerson at 33, Cameron Wake at 34, Khalil Mack, your guy.
My guy.
What do you think about that?
I probably would put him at 135.
135, which is far from a bust, however.
It's 135. Like fourth round pick.
Fourth round pick in the
entire league.
Right.
Jamie Collins is my underrated guy.
He's a very good player.
Yes. He's a stud.
Drew Brees, Lavonte David, who's outstanding. Tony Romo, Patrick Peterson, Vontae Davis round out the top 40. Let's rip through these here a little bit. 41 through 50, DeMarco Murray, Bobby Wagner, Aaron Donald, the rookie defensive tackle last year for the Rams. Kidding me? That guy's a beast, man. Yeah. Calais Campbell, Jimmy Graham, Tyron Smith, the Dallas offensive tackle, Sheldon Richardson, Matt Ryan, Calvin Johnson sliding down. Injuries have kind of, I wouldn't say completely caught up to him, but certainly have slowed him down, but did average over 15 yards a catch.
You know, I don't have
year.
A problem with DeMarco Murray being 41.
Yeah.
I think there's a reason to have DeMarco Murray right there in the middle of the pack of the top 100, and it's because of how good all the other parts of that offense are, especially that offensive line. But we haven't seen anybody on that offensive line ahead of DeMarco Murray yet on this list either, which is a little surprising to me. I get why DeMarco is where he is. Where are the guys that are providing that opportunity?
Tyron
for him?
Smith is in the top 40 or right. top 50, but
right.
so he's right, basically even with him, on par with him. I go back to what Michael Irvin said a few weeks ago. He said, "Hey, if anybody can do it, why do they feel the need to give him the ball nearly 400 times last year? Why do they lessen the workload? If Joseph Randle could do it just as effectively, or Lance Dunbar, or any of these other guys, then why do they feel the need to carry it 400 times?
Well, they weren't bringing him back.
Exactly. I think that was a big part of it. All right, let's go through here. 51 through 60. 50 was Phillip Rivers, if I didn't mention him. Marcel Darius, the defensive tackle from Buffalo. Andrew Whitworth, the Cincinnati Bengal tackle. Russell Wilson at 53. Clay Matthews.
Pete's guy.
At 54. Fletcher Cox, the defensive end for Philly at 55, Terrell Suggs at 56, Josh Sitton, Green Bay Packer guard at 57, there's A.J. Green at 58, Jason Pierre-Paul at 59, and Joe Staley, the offensive tackle from the 49ers at 60. I'm sorry, Russell Wilson. What more can you do to be ranked in the top 50? He comes in at 53. To me, that is underrated or underranked as far as Russell Wilson goes. Anybody else jump out at you there?
Nah.
Not really.
All right. Zach Martin of the Cowboys comes in at 61. Go ahead.
All right. I was going to say, Martin, that shows you that the difference between Yanda, because I think our next guard is Martin, right?
There were a couple
just
of Sitton was
off.
In there. Yeah.
So
Sitton 57? Was in there. Maybe one or two others in there. So your point, though, is
how much better he thinks Yanda is than the pack at guard.
Correct. Right. DeAndre Levy comes in at 62. The linebacker for the Lions, Desmond Trufant, the Atlanta corner, comes in at 63. Adrian Peterson at 64. He didn't play much last year. Certainly, you can make an argument that he should be even higher if you want to, if you think he's going to be healthy this year. Cam Newton at 65. T.Y. Hilton at 66. Your first Jaguar, who went unranked by the NFL Network and NFL.com, Julius Thomas comes in at 67. Pete mentions he had 12 touchdown catches, then got hurt, and it impacted his role with the Broncos. And he's a tough matchup for any defense. The would-be Jaguar, Randall Cobb, right behind him at 68. Mario Williams at 69. And then Pernell McPhee, the Bears linebacker, coming in as he came in from the Ravens. Played for the Ravens last year, now a Bears linebacker.
A lot of would-be Jaguars on this top line.
Yes, true.
They went big game hunting in March.
Continuing to rip through these here, Travis Frederick of the Cowboys, their center, comes in at 71, so that's three members now, the offensive line.
Yep.
We've seen Derek Marks at 72, right about where he ranked with the NFL Network guys as well. Nick Mangold of the Jets at 73. Dante Hightower, the Patriots linebacker. Seems a little high for Dante Hightower at this stage of his career. Cam Chancellor, the Seattle safety. Emmanuel Sanders at 77 or 76. Lodi Nott at 77. Evan Mathis, the Philly guard at 78. Jimmy Smith, the Ravens cornerback. And Xavier Rhodes, that's some pretty high praise. Pete goes on to say the former Seminole by the end of this year might be in the top 30 on the list. Ton of talent, capable of being one of the five best corners in the league. Again, just ripping through these now. Kyle Long of the Bears, Jason Witten of the Cowboys, Jarrell Casey of Tennessee.
I think he's underrated.
I think you're right. I think Jarrell Casey's an outstanding player. Elvis Dumervil of the Ravens, Eddie Lacy coming in at 85, Sean Smith, the Kansas City Chiefs corner at 86, Lawrence Timmons at 87, Jamal Charles at 88. Pete giving a lot of love to the running backs, right? For a guy who doesn't love the running backs, seemingly. LeSean McCoy at 89, and Jonathan Hankins, the Giants defensive tackle at 90. And then rounding out Pete Prisco's top 100 at CBSSports.com, Ryan Kerrigan, would-be Jaguar, of the Redskins, Charles Woodson. Woodson has had two back-to-back ridiculously good years. I mean, unbelievably good years, and he's 38, 39 years old the last 2 years. Joel Batonio, the guard for the Cleveland Browns, in at 92. Interesting, Alex Mack not making this list. Obviously, he got hurt last year,
right,
but, you know, considered going into last season the best at his position. Mike Evans, the Bucs rookie receiver, at 93. Harrison Smith, the Vikings safety, at 94. Greg Olsen, not the Jags offensive coordinator, but the tight end of the Panthers at 95. DeSean Jackson at 96. C.J. Mosley, rookie linebacker last year for Baltimore at 97. Robert Mathis at 98. Alshon Jeffrey, and then Kyle Williams, the Bills defensive tackle. Robert Mathis is 34 years old, coming off a torn Achilles, didn't play last year, had a PED suspension, and then came back and tore his Achilles. I mean, look, I understand what he was 2 years ago, but if you're going to say Alex Mack is not in the top 100 players because he had an injury-plagued season, Robert Mathis, 34-year-old, coming off an Achilles. Good luck replicating that success again.
Yeah, and they signed Trent Cole, so maybe he'll get a matchup or two to, you know, see what he has left. But what I'd like to see underneath this is a breakdown of by team, like who had the most guys
sorted out by
team, who didn't have anybody. But
we know this. Jags got two.
Mm-hmm.
Would be Jags at about six. So there you have it. Pete Prisco, check him out at CBSSports.com. And,
good job, Pete. I like
frequent
that.
Guest of 1010XL 92.5 FM as well. All right, coming up next, we'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight today, asking you best coordinator in Jaguar team history. We'll throw out the candidates for you and take a look at some of the responses we've gotten from you via social media. Metro Rooter brings you the show every Wednesday. It's Jaguars Today on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Da, da, da.
There we go.
Da, da, da.
Tom Bush Volkswagen, they'll hook you up. Okay?
Da, 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 da.
I've been going around the house. My wife thinks I'm crazy. I may be. It gets in my head.
I don't know if that was the deal, but yeah.
It's stuck in there, Brian.
It probably wasn't the convincing.
Maybe not. You know what? I thought of you yesterday. I left here.
That gate was closed.
The gate was closed. Did you notice that?
It was the last 2 days.
Did they check your schedule?
Well, it's been open in the morning, but I guess
it was open today.
For some reason, they decided to close it at noon because the Suns are home. I bet because if it's a 1 o'clock game today, I bet it'd be closed when we go out.
Well, that's a good point. I think they are worried about people sneaking in there and
parking,
not paying
their
$5 to park. As far as that goes. I shouldn't tell. No, I'm not going to tell you what. All we do is say, hey, we're working in the building. And
yeah.
They just wave you right by. There's no, you know, show ID or anything. Of course, then, I guess if you park the car towards the stadium and you walk back past that parking attendant, there may be fisticuffs in your immediate future. Josie and T-Wig will be out at the ballpark.
They
today.
Take their job that seriously.
Hacker.
Kidding me?
The
Hacker.
Parking lot guy.
How's the honeymoon going?
How do I know? I don't know. The guy doesn't.
I was asking the Hacker.
Every time.
I forget. I do. You need to set me up. You need to remind me.
Hey,
Dirt. I got to talk about that. It's private. Okay? You need to warn me because I did it right away.
I got to show up earlier for this show so I can.
Well, you did today. You were like, I didn't know what to do. You were here like 30 minutes before we tipped off today.
Yeah.
So I got to go over impressions before I get here.
Or just know what you got. I just know when you want me to, or give me the heads up when you want me to be hacker.
Okay.
Boy, we should all have that problem. All right. Jaguar offensive coordinators, defensive coordinators. Here's the list. How many can you name, Tony? How many do you think you can name?
Not a bunch.
It's tough, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking, I'm like, oh, yeah, I remember that. I remember that. I remember that. You haven't been here all the years. How many do you think you can get?
Offense and defense?
Yeah.
Okay. I can go Olson.
Yeah.
Fish.
Yeah.
Bratkowski.
Yeah.
Cutter.
Yeah.
Mel Tucker.
Bob. Okay. Oh, you switched to the other side.
I'm
okay.
Going
Mel
Bob,
and Bob. Yeah.
Bob Babich.
Yeah.
Capers.
Yeah.
Gilbride.
Yep.
Duran.
Yep.
And that's it.
God, boy, I would have forgotten Gary Moeller. Defensive coordinator, right? Wasn't he the Michigan coach for a while?
I think so.
Your defensive coordinators start from 95 to 98, Dick Duran, Dom Capers for 2 years, 99 and 2000, Gary Moeller for one season, then John Pease was the coordinator in 2002, Mike Smith, of course, from 2003 to 2007 under Jack Del Rio, Greg Williams for 1 year, and then you mentioned Tucker and Babich. Gilbride, Carson Palmer, Tom Coughlin was his own offensive coordinator for a couple of years, Bobby Petrino for one season, Bill Musgrave, nice. Carl Smith for 2 years, the maybe the most forgotten offensive coordinator for the Jags, Carl Smith.
Now Russell Wilson's quarterback coach.
Is that right? Is that what he's doing right now? It's pretty good for him. Dirk Cutter, Bratkowski, Fish, and Olson, as you mentioned. Today we asked you in the da-da-da Tom Bush question of the day, Tom Bush Volkswagen, we'll call it, question of the day today. Who is the best coordinator? And, of course, you know, no love for Joe DeCamillis, who many consider one of the best special teams coordinators ever in the National Football League, one of the best guys. But people tend to think in offensive and defensive terms. That's fine. So, Tony, what kind of response?
Here's what we got from Austin. A lot will say Smith, but best single season. Dom Capers, only here 2 years, but in 99 has D-ranked first in points allowed. From Colby, Chris Palmer and his work with Brunell. From Ocho Ficho, Dom Capers. From Paul, easily Dom Capers, hashtag not close. From Cam, Dick Duran had a great stint here, then went on to be a head coach for two teams. From Cristiano, Greg Williams, hashtag paid me a bounty to say that. From Griffin, Tommy Coughlin calling all the plays in 99, sixth in the league in total offense, second in total rushing. From David, the last time we had a potent offense was when TC was calling the plays. Yeah, I said it, TC. From Dusty, offensive coordinator Tom Coughlin, some good seasons when he was pulling double duty. From Nick, Mike Smith, arguably the best defenses we ever had under his tenure as defensive coordinator. And the collector, I've got to say Dom, hands down, with Smitty coming in second.
The collector is getting all the Infinity Gems together. Mm-hmm. A lot of people are so adamant, just hands down it's Mike Smith, or hands down it's Kevin Gilbride, or hands down it's Dom Capers. There's no discussion. My initial thought was Capers. I think they led the league in scoring defense his first year in 99 when they went 14-2. Coughlin was an outstanding offense coordinator, I thought. Kevin Gilbride, it just seemed, 96 just seemed more fun. They had more actual success in the win-loss column as the years went on under Chris Palmer and then TC doing the offense coordinating, but taking that group, 96, the second half of the season was amazing. I mean, the what they put together and how quickly they put it together after a season and a half.
Sure.
Every week seemed like a shootout. I mean, every week it seemed like they were going up and down the field with somebody. So maybe we should hold Dick Duran accountable for not stopping anybody.
Right. I mean, my first thought was Mike Smith. And that's just because that's the last time I remember anyone was scared of anything Jacksonville was going to do to you. It was what Mike Smith was able to do on that defensive side of the ball.
Never got much. It was always like, oh, Del Rio's a defense, right? When you come in as a coordinator under a coach, whatever side of the ball is his specialty, you're not going to get as much of the credit, typically. A few on Facebook. Billy Winnestorfer said Kevin Gilbride and Mike Smith, hashtag Jaguars today. Steve Muncy went with Dom Capers. Although he didn't really prove it while he was here, he said. Capers for defenses, Alan Lynn, Gilbride for offense. Derek Klobaka went with Bob Bratkowski. I think he might have been joking. Joshua
Lee
Wright.
I thought it was funny.
Yeah, like that. Too easy, Gilbride on offense, Smith on defense. Slim Pickens, though, with a short history, hashtag Jaguars today. And then Michael Wren, emptied out the hashtag bin. He went Mike Smith hands down, hashtag Jaguars today, hashtag shut up Randy, hashtag hash brown selfie, hashtag Dempsey is back in first place, hashtag 1010XL NASCAR league. Yes, back in first place as the summer portion of the schedule stretches out. Although, Tony, apparently the guys you left in last week,
they were good. Starting summer hot.
Okay,
I think I'm in fifth.
You were red hot for the summer as far as that all went. How good of a defensive coordinator is Bob Babich? I mean, Bob, the defense has been ahead of the offense certainly the last couple of years, but statistically it hasn't been a dominant unit at this point in time.
They get a lot of interceptions.
What is that? Is that scheme? Is that youth? Is that what is that? A combination of things?
I mean, I don't think they send enough pressure for what their talents. You know, when you're deficient in some areas, you try to make up for that. To me, take chances.
Yeah.
Very simple in that respect. When it first half of last year, they couldn't stop the run, and when they started doing a little bit better, it's who cares? They're 1-7. So, they've added players, so you expect to see you expect to see better results this year.
Tony, Bob Babich. Again, same thing, combination of factors, too tough to judge, or would you like to see him be more aggressive and send the house a little bit more?
I think they need to be. Look, we've talked about the sack numbers from last year and the percentage of those numbers that came from their ability on the back end with coverage, and I think you feel pretty good about, you know, the three or four corners they're going to be to throw out there on the field. I think you expect a little bit more from the safety play this year with Jonathan Cyprien, and you hope you got better at free safety. So you bring in Skuda to play that auto spot because he can rush the passer a little bit. That's kind of the idea of bringing in a guy like that. I think Telvin Smith, when they allowed him to be that type of guy, that blitzing linebacker, was really effective at doing that kind of thing. They just didn't do much of it. I do think they need to be more aggressive on that side of the ball, especially if you feel like you have the coverage guys in place, which they got to feel better about it this year than they did last year with the guys they got playing corner. I know they love Colvin. We know how they feel about McCray. What does Devon House look like in this defense? I guess it takes a little bit of a feeling out process with that. But, yeah, I mean, I'd like to see him be a little bit more aggressive on that side of the ball to create pressure instead of let teams look comfortable for huge chunks of football games, which they did last year.
Obviously, the key, as it's been talked about ad nauseum, seems like for the last few years, the key, or one of the keys to Seattle's defense, is the ability to get pressure with the front four, right? So you don't have to blitz, and once you're able to do that, it makes your defense so much more effective for so many other reasons. But I agree, when you're not at that stage, you build towards that,
yeah.
But do something to, you know, to
get out of the box a little bit.
Right, create that consistent pressure. Look, they got results with the sacks, but the pressure numbers weren't where they needed them to be last year. By the way, totally unrelated, I believe, to my reading of the posting about the NASCAR league, someone submitted Eric Almirola about a half an hour ago. I don't know if that's what that could have been in reference to.
I think we were doing a competition to get registered for the...
Oh, was that what it
tickets,
was?
Yeah.
Oh, maybe that's what it was. I wasn't paying attention to that. So there you go. Eric Almirola didn't realize he had a stint as a coordinator for the Jags. And we did get a vote at the last minute for Joe DeCamillis coming in from Grant as well. All right. What do you have coming up in the Times Union? Good question, Mike.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember the budget here. We got a story on Dwayne Gratz in tomorrow's paper. We'll be back at OTAs tomorrow. I'll have a Jaguars insider on Sunday.
Okay.
Topics to be determined.
Check all that out from Ryan O'Halloran and on Twitter, of course, at Ryan O'Halloran. Pretty simple. Jaguars.com live coming up this afternoon as well, early afternoon, featuring Aaron Colvin.
And Jaguar fan favorite, Jason Cole.
Everyone loves him. Jason Cole will be there for you. Jason Cole, Michael
Keep
Silver.
Keep it clean, fans.
Was Michael Silver not available? Is that how that worked out? I'm not sure.
Who do you guys like?
Jason Cole. They don't like anybody. That's all right. They don't have to. They like who they like, and they don't like who they don't like.
I'm happy you seem to tolerate us.
Yeah, I seem to. Right?
Thank you.
We don't know. We don't know. I mean, for all we know, you're shaking your fist at the radio for
That's why
2 hours.
I tolerate
every single day. I don't know what they could really do, you know, short of catching us in the parking lot and trying to hobble us or something, Tony. I don't know what they could do.
Don't
to
give
keep
them
us
ideas.
Out of there. All right, one more practice tomorrow. What's the schedule for next week for OTAs?
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday.
Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. The following week,
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
And they'll have the open minicamp practice on the 18th, right?
Yeah, 2 weeks from tomorrow.
I think that sounds right. Yeah,
yeah.
Two weeks from tomorrow on that. So hopefully we'll see you out there. We will broadcast live from the Florida Blue practice fields that day. So stop by and say hello. Make your plans now. And that'll be, we believe, an 11 o'clock practice on the 18th if you can clear your schedule. All right, that does it for us today. I'm glad we could bring you some sound from Gus and Greg Olson. I got my Gus fix. He just walked by the studio a minute ago. Dude, we haven't seen him much in the last 2 weeks, Tony, because we've been on the air and he's been on the practice field.
Yep.
That's the way it goes. T-Wig joining Joe C. at the baseball grounds of Jacksonville. The boys of XL Primetime coming up next. Dirt, I'm still on my honeymoon. I won't be back today. Right? That's his bro, Howard. He's so easy. He is so easy. It's easy to send him off in a good mood.
I get a tape of that.
You know what? I'll put together just the greatest hits just for you. How about that? But don't let it cause you to take your eyes off the road. The gate probably will be closed today. So go around. All right. For Ryan O'Halloran, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt, and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. This has been Jaguars Today on a Metro Rooter Wednesday here on 1010XL 92.5 FM.